What the fuck? Welcome to the extremely professional and high budget podcast, What the Fuck Is Wrong With People? Just kidding. We are neither of those things, but we're glad you're here anyways. My name is Rihanna, and joining me is the podcast hostess with the mostest, Kelsey.
Hey guys.
How's it going?
It's going. It was Halloween last night at the time of this recording, and I am exhausted. We had 140 children.
Ooh, that's a lot.
Come to the door, which is... It was exhausting. It was really fun, but it's hard. Yeah. For some reason, it's hard to hand out candy for 3 hours.
It's just a lot of like being on, right?
It's true, but it was good. Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm super excited to talk about this topic. So we are going to be getting into the Gabby Petito case and the phenomenon known as the missing white women syndrome. We've done some research, which you guys know we love, and we're going to talk about that today, get into it. And then we're also going to talk about some of the other missing people that were found as a result of the very extensive search for Gabby Petito in the national park where she was found. It was a national park, right?
Yeah, it started out as I was researching. I thought that's what happened, and that's how the articles presented what had happened, is that these 9 people were found while looking for Gabby. But that actually isn't the case, but they were all related somehow to the case in some way. We'll get into that, yeah.
We will. But before we get into that, it's time for everybody's favorite segment, wine/drink of the week.
Yeah!
And Kelsey, who is pregnant and therefore not able to drink wine.
It's so sad.
Well, that's okay. It's only temporary.
It's true.
And what are you drinking this evening? I'm excited to hear.
So I was prepared for this episode except for my drink. And I remembered like maybe a good 15 minutes before that I had to make something. So I made my own version of a Starbucks drink at home. So at Starbucks, it's called a honey citrus mint tea. And what it is 2 different teas mixed with steamed lemonade and honey.
Ooh, that sounds so good.
It's so good and it's so comforting. And like, I like to drink it all the time, but it would be the perfect drink when you feel kind of like you have a cold or something. Like it's just so...
under the weather.
Yeah, warm from the inside. So I took a ginger peach tea from President's Choice and President's Choice Dreamland Herbal Tea. And then put them in water with a little bit of lemon juice and agave instead of honey. And it's
that
so good.
So good.
It's so good. It is better with lemonade versus like a little bit of lemon juice, but the lemon juice works in a pinch.
That sounds delicious and very cozy for fall.
It's so cozy, especially because I'm still in my pajamas.
That's fine.
And what are you drinking?
I am drinking, you know, what's so funny is earlier I was like, I really don't feel like drinking wine tonight. And I was like, maybe I'll just drink something else. Then I was like, no, I gotta carry on the tradition of wine of the week.
You're so holding it together for the both of us.
I'm really taking one for the team. You're welcome. You know, I'm just kidding. Then I was like, I'll open a bottle of red because red is, you know, you could just open it and have a glass and then I'll have some more as the week goes along. So I'm drinking an Argentinian wine. It is, hopefully I'm saying this correct, it's C-U-M-A, Kuma?
I would think so.
And it's their Cab Sav, which is really good. It's smooth, not too dry, which I'm not a huge dry red, ooh, that's a mouthful, dry red wine drinker. I prefer like a smoother sort of like fruity one. So it's good. I like it.
Ooh, it sounds really nice.
Okay. Just before we start, I want to say that we already tried to record this episode, to start recording this episode, and we hadn't even done the intro and I hung up on Kelsey in our Zoom call.
It's very, like we said, it's very high budget.
High budget, super professional.
We are on top of things.
Only the finest content. And then we were both, I think, just like chatting away. And I was like, where is Kelsey? The struggle is real.
But here we are.
That's right.
All right.
Let's get into it.
Yeah.
I'm sure everyone's familiar with this case, but...
I mean, I would think so. If you're into this sort of thing at all, like true crime, like we talked about in episode 10, talked about our love of true crime and like the complications that go with that. But we were very into this case in terms of like we both followed it and talked about it together.
Yeah.
So just to give you guys a brief overview in case you aren't aware or just to refresh your memory, the Gabby Petito case is about 22-year-old Gabby Petito and her fiance, Brian Laundry. They were traveling across America in June, Gabby's van. Gabby was a blogger. She was kind of vlogging the whole thing. So on August 12th, the Utah police were called and encountered Gabby and Brian because of an altercation that they had, and they were separated for the night. As per a 911 call, there was a man slapping the girl. He proceeded to hit her, hop in the car, and they drove off. And that was in quotes. On the 17th, Brian flew from Salt Lake City to Tampa to deal with their storage unit and then flew back to meet her on the 23rd. And then on the 27th, they had an altercation at a restaurant in Wyoming. It's stated that Gabby was very emotional and Brian was very angry during the altercation. In the last week of August is when Gabby had her last communication with her family, August 27th. They received a message on the 30th as well, but they don't believe it was her. On the 29th, potentially, Brian received a ride from a couple and stated he was camping alone for several days. Well, Gabby worked on social media from the van, and they dropped him off at Jackson Dam. And then he was picked up by another woman a few minutes later and was dropped off at Spread Creek camping area. She said she would drive him further. He insisted on being dropped off at the entrance. On the 1st, he returned home alone in Gabby's van, which is in Northport, Florida. On the 6th, Brian and his family went camping from the 6th to the 8th at Fort DeSoto Campground. On the 11th, Gabby's family reported her missing after not being able to contact her. On the 16th of September, Gabby's family had a press conference begging for the Laundry family to help in their investigation to find Gabby. Then on the 17th of September, the Laundry family reported to police that they hadn't seen Brian since the 14th or 13th when he left for a hike. So that's when they began to search for Brian. On the 18th, the police began to search Carlton Reserve for Brian. On the 19th, Gabby's body was found in Teton County, near the Spread Creek campground. It was determined she was strangled to death and was killed 3 to 4 weeks before being found. On the 23rd of September, an arrest warrant was issued for Brian for use of unauthorized devices. And on October 20th, his body was found along with personal items belonging to him. And all of that timeline you can find on CNN.com. The article is called A Timeline of 22-Year-Old Gabby Petito's Case by Christina Maxuris. And since then, there hasn't been a lot of information that's come out.
I think this case really captivated everyone. Like, it was all over, not just mainstream media, but social media. There was lots of social media sleuthing and actually, like, another vlogger that had footage of the van helped find her body. That information helped find her body. So it was very interesting. And like Kelsey said, we were both following the case and intrigued by it. And there's a lot of different things at play. Like, obviously, the fact that there was body cam footage for almost an hour of body cam footage of them a month prior.
Right.
Clearly in distress. Right. Gabby was clearly in distress and, you know, they had this domestic altercation. So there was a lot of layers to it. And then just the fact that his family
didn't participate. I found that so strange. Yeah.
Like, his family just totally was like not helpful at all. And, you know, obviously they waited to report him missing, which was very sketchy in my opinion. And, you know, there's people saying like, oh, they're helping him cover it up, which I don't know, there's lots of opinions about that, obviously.
It's true. But
it was really sad because, you know, her family is like begging his family like, please help us find our daughter, and they just, you know, weren't doing anything, which is pretty sad.
It is, and I feel so bad for the Petito family because it must be so hard to have this happen to you, like your daughter or family member has gone missing and the people who could help Brian specifically, who could help, aren't saying anything, aren't doing anything. And then you also have the whole world trying to guess what happened.
Yeah.
And also, I saw a lot of stuff online. I wouldn't say a lot, but there is definitely some voices out there blaming Gabby. Like, kind of flipping the domestic situation around and saying, like, she pushed him to do it sort of thing. And, like, that would just be so hard to hear. Because no one deserves to be murdered.
No, and no one knows. No one knows you know, their close friends and family would know their dynamic, but no one knows what went on except for the two of them.
Exactly.
That day, right? So, and you're right. No one deserves to be murdered. And it's really sad. Like, it's obviously a tragedy. And I feel so bad for her family as well. And, you know, his parents have also had, you know, a tough time despite how they've handled it. Whatever, that's how they felt it was best for their family. But reporters camped outside their place, and now mm-hmm. they've lost their son as well, right? So
yes,
there's lots of conspiracy theories as well, which I don't really like, especially when it's happening in real time.
Yeah,
I get it. Everyone wanted to know and solve it. And, you know, I was the same. I was following along and waiting to hear what happened and, you know, theorizing, but not posting conspiracy theories on social media.
Oh, exactly.
That can just travel so quickly.
Well, as we've seen with all kinds of things recently, something gets posted online and there'll be someone out there who believes it, regardless of how much fact it has behind it.
Exactly.
And it's true. Like, I feel bad for his family as well, because, like, now they've lost someone as well. And, like, who knows what he told them in the first couple days? Because what did I say? He got back on the 1st and he had gone missing on the 13th. So, like, who knows what he told them? And also, like, that's their son. Like, I'm not a parent yet, but I imagine your first instinct is to protect them. Not saying that's right or wrong, but...
Yeah. Yeah. There's lots of opinions on that. And I agree. It's hard because I'm not a parent, so I don't know that love. But I also like to think that if my child made a terrible mistake or, you know, did something really bad to hurt someone else, that while I would stand by them, I don't know if I would protect them from justice. You know, does that make sense?
Yes. I think ideally that would be the outcome.
I say that not being a parent and never obviously having been in anything even similar to that situation. So right. It's easy to say, oh, I would do this and I'm a good person, but.
Right. And like, who knows what happened? And like, it's so easy to speculate.
Exactly.
And the reality is they're both gone and it's very unfortunate.
Yeah, it's very sad. Not only was this case extremely interesting and followed and reported on to like a very extreme extent. Like, it was like anytime you open social media, there was posts about it. It also brought a lot of conversation about how much attention this case was getting compared to other cases that are currently happening as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Other people that are missing, you know, all that sort of stuff. There was a lot of conversation about that in addition to conversation about the actual case itself, which was really interesting. And in a way, it's good because it's brought that to light. Right?
Yes, I think so. Because that's important too. Like, it's very real, especially in Canada with yes. the missing and murdered Indigenous women.
Mm-hmm.
There is so many that are, and it's, you never hear about it.
No.
Until cases like this come up and then it's brought up as, why don't these get attention?
Secondary, right?
Yeah.
So I did some research on a phenomenon, like I said in the beginning, that is known as missing white women syndrome. And basically, it refers to media coverage of missing person cases involving young, white, usually upper middle class women, compared to the very little media attention that missing women and men who are not white or from a lower social class get. And this term is widely considered to be originated by an American news anchor named Gwen Ifill. And basically, white women occupy this privileged role as violent crime victims versus other minorities, which the long and the short of it is it's because of racism, obviously.
And there's the episode.
That's the episode. I mean, I could do all the research I wanted. I knew that that's what it was. Of course, we all know, right?
How could it not be?
And we're going to dive into that a little more. One interesting thing, and sorry, I found this information about just the phenomenon in general from Wikipedia. And one thing I found very interesting is that a lot of cases with missing or murdered white women have led to different laws.
So the Wikipedia page says several laws have been created in the aftermath of disappearance cases and are sometimes informally named after the missing person. And people have observed that the disappearances of white women give rise to such laws more often than missing women of color or missing men. So there's a couple examples. There's Lacey and Connor's Law, which was named after Lacey Peterson, who was pregnant at the time of her murder. Obviously, there's the Amber Alert laws. Those ones are on child abduction. However, Amber, the young girl that the law is named after, was white. And there's a few others as well on Wikipedia that they talk about.
Where white women are the victims.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Me neither. And it kind of makes sense when you think about it.
Yeah.
That those cases get the most attention. They get the most action.
Like activism and...
Right. So it does make sense. But I had never really thought of that. They think that in addition to race and class, there's other factors that are at play, like attractiveness, which is subjective, of course.
Yeah.
Your body type, your youthfulness.
Yeah.
And news coverage of missing Black or other non-white people are more likely to focus on the victim's issues, like, oh, they had an abusive boyfriend, or oh, they had problems with drugs in the past, or oh, they didn't graduate high school. Whereas coverage of white women tends to focus on, she was this wonderful daughter, she was so inspiring, she was a beloved mother, she was the best friend someone could ask for, right?
Kind of like, I know it's not quite the same thing, but you know, that makes me think of when Breonna Taylor was murdered by the police, which isn't quite the same thing as missing white women, but they tried to focus on, I can't remember though, if it was like her boyfriends had weed or, I mean, I need to look at that and actually cite it, but I feel like they tried to do that in so many of those cases. And same with George Floyd. It was all about what they had done wrong.
Yep.
Even though the police straight up murdered them. Like, there's no...
Exactly. It's trivializing it as well.
Yeah.
Especially for like the Breonna Taylor case. Like, you know, it's trivializing her cold-blooded murder.
Right.
You know, like, even though that, I get, wasn't a series of very unfortunate events. Not that people are blameless, because obviously, but it was just like...
Totally.
They tried to justify it.
That's what it was, right? Justifying, oh, well, it's not that bad because this. And you're like, no. Yeah, you shot this woman in her bed for no reason.
In her own apartment while she was sleeping. And in the Wikipedia page, there was some different studies and research cited. One that I found was interesting was in a 2016 Esquire article about the disappearance of Tiffany Witten. A journalist observed that white women of lower social status, such as Witten, who was an unemployed drug user who's on parole, they don't get as much media attention because media outlets are ruthlessly selective and they tend to prefer women who are white, pretty, and above all, innocent. And it kind of goes into almost like purity and like, you know, like blonde hair, blue eyes, innocent, pretty, young.
Right.
This image of a pure being who was taken or, you know, in this case, we're talking about missing women, but violent crime in general. So murdered or attacked, you know, sexually assaulted, right? This loss of innocence.
Right. Like, how could this horrible thing happen to this perfect person?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that's, really fucked up.
It's really gross, to be honest.
Yeah. And the thing about this is, and I think everyone knows this, but I feel like I should say it anyways. It's not that these cases don't deserve the attention they get, because of course they do.
Mm-hmm.
A tragedy is a tragedy, right? A family is a family. But it's just that it's so, so extremely uneven.
Yes, exactly. Like, no one's upset that these cases are getting attention, I don't think. But it's upsetting that other cases aren't getting attention for very gross reasons. Like,
it's pretty crazy. So I found a really good article. It is called The Long American History of Missing White Women Syndrome, and it's by Helen Rosner from The New Yorker.
Okay.
And in the article, she interviews an English professor and scholar named Jean Murley. They talk about, you know, the racial dynamics and this cultural phenomenon of turning disappearances and deaths into sort of almost like entertainment, which is also really icky.
Mm-hmm.
But the start of the article, I just want to read it. Last month, the disappearance of 22-year-old Gabby Petito became a sensation, attracting play-by-play coverage in the news and avid amateur sleuthing on social media. At the same time, the national fascination with Petito's case sparked a debate about the nature of the fascination itself. The photos of Petito that filled our screens showed an attractive, blonde, young white woman who radiated the curated happiness of a social media native, and critics noted that the coverage of her disappearance and the subsequent identification of her remains dwarfed the attention that both the media and law enforcement paid to other missing and murdered people, especially those who are Black and Indigenous. Which I just really liked that, like, summary of it.
That is a really nice summary.
They talk about how these narratives, we get so attracted to them because they make sense of the senseless, right? Like,
right.
We want to know, okay, first of all, like, where, you know, where is she? And everyone hopes that she's alive. And then,
yeah,
you know, as time goes on, it's like, okay, well, she, you know, she's probably not alive. So then what happened to her? We need to find out so that her family can have some sort of closure, right? And that we can know what happened. And
yeah,
it's kind of crazy how everything is at our fingertips. And, like, you know, we can just consume these things, so much information about these things in such a fast period of time.
Yes.
It's, I don't know if it's good or bad.
It is crazy. And it's also crazy the amount of information you can get from different places. Like, with specifically with Gabby's case, I know I would be reading about it online, and then I would go on TikTok and I would come across a video about it with information, and then another video with conspiracy theories, and like it would keep coming at you.
Yep. It is true. It's crazy. Like, you can't even escape it unless you decide to not look at social media, right?
Right, like, to not engage.
Yeah. And in this article, Jean, the person that was being interviewed, had said that, basically to summarize, that true crime is a white genre. And at first I was like, what does that mean? Like, I was like, I don't really agree with that. But then basically it's like America, which, you know, we're talking a lot about America, but North America as a whole, I think you could kind of generalize that it narrates this version that America and North America are mostly white, which is so far from the truth.
Yeah.
But it's like white America, right? Mainstream media telling white people a story about danger and violence against women when the data shows that the majority of homicide victims in the US, that's from this article, are young men of color, which people aren't as interested in. And that's just the truth of it, because of racism.
Right. And that kind of makes sense. Like, I wasn't quite sure what you meant by white media either, but it, when you describe it, that does make sense. Like, mainstream media in North America is provided by white companies and typically white
upper class.
Yeah. Typically white journalists. I mean, at least whenever I turn on the news, I actually don't know the ethnicity of the people that write the articles, but
I would say it's predominantly white, right? I mean, I think it's getting better, but so I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting.
An interesting way of looking at it. Yeah. And again, she talked about how, you know, they're either, these cases of people of color, men, they're either ignored or, again, trivialized, where we can attribute this to drugs, crime, gangs, and so it's not as deserving of our attention because it's easily explained away, right?
Right. It's like, quote unquote, less interesting.
And less palatable for racist people. Oh my gosh. I'm laughing because it's like so terrible.
Like, yeah, it's like a horrified laughter.
Exactly.
And something about the Petito case is that I felt like there was a lot of twists, and it was so, like, easy to come up with a bunch of different theories about what could have happened, and, like, interesting in that way, which isn't really the narrative when it comes to those, like, gang-style cases. When they're presented in the media, it's just like, this is what happened, and you're like, okay.
Yeah, you know, neither one of us are saying that her case wasn't interesting. We've already said it was really interesting. Mm-hmm. You can't deny that, I don't think. And that's part of the reason why it got a lot of attention and social media. It blew up on social media. But at the root of it is, I think, really because of she's young, pretty, sweet, white girl.
And she already had a following.
Yeah.
Like, it's true. And I definitely don't disagree with that.
Yeah. It's just like, why can't they all get that much attention or have that much manpower looking for them? Why can't all people get that, right?
Oh, exactly.
And then one last article I want to talk about, it is called News Media Can't Shake Missing White Women Syndrome, Critics Say, and it's from the New York Times, and it was written by Katie Robertson. And in this article, there is a quote from Danielle Slackoff, who is an assistant professor at California State University, and she researches criminal justice in the media. And she said, "Research, including my own work, has shown that white missing women and girls do receive more coverage, and they receive more to start, and then they receive more repeated coverage. And white women are typically depicted as good people, while women of color are often characterized as risk takers or somehow complicit in their own disappearances. We hold Black and people of color to a different standard than we hold white people. We just do. That's just how society is as a whole.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just so... I feel like, do we talk about racism in every episode? Like,
it's what the fuck is wrong with people. It is the main thing that is wrong with people.
Like, how many issues can we tie back to racism?
All of them.
And in this article, Danielle Slackoff, the professor, she says that there's a number of reasons why these stories get so much attention. You know, obviously in this case, there was social media and a lot of it went viral, but then it almost started getting into the realm of entertainment. Mm-hmm. Like people were consuming it as if it were like a movie,
yeah,
rather than real life. And then they do talk a little bit in this article about profit from media companies and the fact that historically all of these types of stories with missing or murdered white women get so much engagement.
Yes.
So it's sort of like a vicious cycle, right? It's
right.
Like the media's business is getting people to watch.
Right, or traffic on their websites.
Exactly. And so they show what they know will play to their core audience.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, exactly.
You know, I think, again, the fact that we're having this discourse about the lack of attention on people of color's crimes against people of color or missing people of color is good. The fact that Gabby's case brought more light to that is good. But it's just like we're so far from
change, really.
Equality, yeah.
Yeah.
And just like it makes me really sad. And then, yeah, it's like in Canada, because we've been talking a lot about the States, and you mentioned earlier about our missing and murdered Indigenous women, which is, you know, like a huge thing here. And there's just so much systemic racism in Canada towards Indigenous people. And that's part of the reason why we don't hear about these stories and that these people go unfound. And, you know, you don't see swarms of like law enforcement searching for another Indigenous woman who's gone missing.
Right.
Right. Which is so sad because like everyone's human at the end of the day.
Exactly.
Regardless of the choices that they make in their lives.
Or who they are. Yeah. Like it's really sad that that's the way that it is. And I feel like this comes up a lot whenever there's a big case like Gabby's in the media. It comes up that like kind of what about them? Like what about the missing and murdered Indigenous women, or like in the States, the missing or murdered people of color? And nothing really changes, which is really sad.
It is sad. And I know that there are some people who are advocating and trying to cover more of the, like, even some of the podcasts, because of course we love true crime.
Yes.
Some of the podcasts, the true crime podcasts that I listen to, have started to cover more stories about people of color, which I think is really good. But yeah, there's so much work left to be done, not just in this space, but in all aspects of our social class system and all of that. I found it really interesting though, researching this part, and it made me think about it in a different way, because I didn't feel guilty about how interested I was in Gabby Petito's case, but it did make me think about why are we so drawn to those cases over others?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Like, because that's kind of how I describe it. Like, I don't necessarily feel guilt, maybe a little bit of white guilt about it, but it does make you self-reflect on, okay, why am I so interested in this? Is it because it's what the media is pushing at me? Is it because I personally have some sort of stake in it or what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, do you relate to it as a woman? Right. You know?
Yeah.
Like, but it's just so, you could Google somebody else that's missing that is not white, who's a person of color, and find like one or two articles, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
When there was so much coverage on this case that it was kind of crazy.
It is crazy.
It's saying something that there's multiple articles about the coverage of her case, not the actual details of her case.
Oh, for sure. And like, I know when I was looking up stuff, because kind of between Brian going missing and them finding him, I think I Googled Brian Laundrie found like at least twice a week.
Oh, same. I was checking social media.
Yeah. But you'd come across articles that were published like every other day with no new information.
Yeah, that whole like 24-hour news cycle where we're just hearing the same things over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And people are still clicking, including us.
Right? And so you're like, why is this even getting published? This doesn't have anything new to say. Yeah. And so there must be hundreds and hundreds of articles about this case.
Oh, absolutely.
Compared to other cases that have like a byline. Not a byline. I don't know any of the actual media terms, but they have like
me neither.
A small paragraph.
Yeah.
And when I was researching these other people that were found during the Petito case, the amount of articles for these people were so varied, but none of them came close to the number of articles for Gabby and Brian. And it was just interesting. I was kind of thinking about that when I was doing my research.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing about that, because the first place I heard about it was on TikTok, actually.
Yeah.
The fact that they had found other people. So which cases are you going to tell us about?
Well, that's where I actually had heard about it as well, which is also kind of where the topic of this episode came from.
I think you actually sent it to me.
I might have, actually.
Yeah, that's how I first found out about it.
This was a couple weeks ago. I came across this TikTok video about how they had discovered, and in the video, which I might be able to post somewhere if I can find it, that they had found 9 bodies in the search for Gabby and Brian. And I was like, why haven't I heard about this? I've read so many articles about this case, and none of them had said, oh, by the way, we found these 9 other people.
Yeah.
And so I had to go research and be like, is this actually true? And so in my little research, I found it is and it isn't.
Okay.
So in the first place, like, I Googled like 9 bodies found while looking for Gabby and Brian, and some articles come up anywhere between 4 to 9 bodies, depending on the article you look at. Like, and none of the news sources were particularly like ones that you would think of as mainstream media. Okay. Like Marca.com, Radar Online, IGV Official. Like, I don't know these sites.
Never heard of them.
Exactly. And so the one article I did find that has the most clout, I would say, is there's a People.com article that stated 4 bodies. And I will post all of my sources and Rihanna's sources on our website, so you guys can go look at these sources on your own. I went through 2 different articles to find the names of people that were cited as being found during the searches, and then did separate searches for all these people to actually see what happened to them, why they were connected to the case, and that sort of thing. So the first 2 articles that I looked at, there was a Fox 13 News article, which, I mean, Fox News isn't my favorite, but it's a legitimate news site.
It's mainstream media.
It's mainstream media. And then the other one was 6 Park News, which I've never heard of, but it seems to be some sort of American news site. So I went through those 2 articles. There are articles on these bodies discovered, and came up with a list of 9 people that they said were found during the searches, which isn't true. Let me read you the titles. So on the Fox 13 News article, it's titled, Amid Gabby Petito Brian Laundry Search, 6 Additional Bodies Are Discovered. And then the 6 Park News article is, National Search for Gabby Petito and Brian Laundry Uncovers 9 Bodies. So does that not sound like they found these bodies while looking for the 2 of them?
Yeah, that's what I thought. Is that, that's not accurate?
Which is not accurate. So,
oh, okay, interesting.
As I did deeper searches, like, the articles talked briefly about each person, but never really said, like, and they were found while looking for this person. Or no, they're just like, somehow were connected to them. It was very vague. So I'm like, I'm going to actually look at these other articles, like, do independent searches on each of these people and see kind of what I can find out. And I also want to say, I hadn't heard about any of these people until I had started doing these searches. Like, I haven't heard about a single case, which I also found interesting.
I believe it.
So I'm going to go kind of in order that these people were found. So on August 19th, which was around the time, well, just before Gabby went missing, they found the bodies of, and I might get people's names wrong, and I'm very sorry, but I'll try my best, of Kylan Schulte, who was 24, and her wife, Crystal Turner, who was 38. They were found shot at a campsite in Moab, Utah.
I think it's Moab.
Moab? Okay.
That's the one case I did hear about, because at one point there was a conspiracy that
they were
Brian
connected.
Had murdered them as well.
Right.
With, there was no evidence other than they were in the same vicinity.
Around the same time.
Around the same time. Yeah. So I did hear about that one.
And so that's really the connection between them. They weren't found during the search for Brian and Gabby, obviously, because they hadn't disappeared yet. Kylan and Crystal were last seen August 13th at a bar in that city, where they were telling a friend about a creepy man that was camping nearby to them. And their case is still being investigated. So there's no, I couldn't find any, like, suspects or anything when I was doing my research.
Which, even that is so crazy that that case didn't get more attention. And I'm pretty sure, and this could be wrong, I'm pretty sure they're both white.
They're both white.
That case is all, like, to me, I'm like, two women camping were murdered. There's no, you're telling me there's no suspects. There's no
right?
information. It seems so crazy that there isn't more attention even on that one.
Right. And there were, of the cases, this is one that had more articles than others.
Right.
If I'm remembering correctly, I didn't make notes on this, but if I'm remembering correctly, they did find a cell phone nearby. Whether it's connected, I don't know. But it, like, you'd think there would be more, because it is, like, intriguing. There's these two women camping, yeah. mentioned a creepy dude, and then were found shot and actually were found, like, partially undressed and assaulted, I believe.
Oh, no.
Which is so tragic. Like, these poor women.
I wonder if part of the reason why it didn't get as much attention is because Gabby's case blew up so much that it just kind of took all the attention.
And that does happen, right? Like, yeah. we have very short attention spans. We can only focus on one thing at a time, which is horrible. And like you said, the reason it's connected to Gabby's right. case is because Gabby and Brian were in the area around the same time. And so they were kind of looking at Brian as a suspect at one point.
Right.
But there is actually no connection.
Interesting.
And like I said, I'll add all my links of my sources to our website in the episode description. So if you guys want to look at where we got this information from, it'll be there because I will be here forever if I have to list all these websites. Then on September 20th, there was a body found in a dumpster near a Walmart in Mobile, Alabama. And it was originally speculated to possibly be Brian because there was possible sightings of him in the area. This was after he had gone missing, right? He went missing September 13th or 14th. But then it was later revealed not to be Brian, but it was actually a homeless man. But his identity and manner of death hasn't been released at all. So,
oh my gosh.
I can't give you any more information on him, unfortunately. But that's so, that is so sad.
That's so sad.
Like, and that's the other thing. He's homeless. So of course, like, I'm not going to say I feel this way, but who cares in the general sense, right? Like,
yes. Again, trivializing it because of that person's lifestyle.
Which is such, like, it's so awful. So there was barely any articles on him. September 28th, then, Robert Lowry's body was found in the same forest as Gabby, the Teton National Forest. So Robert was a 46-year-old man from Texas who disappeared on August 19th after he flew to Jackson Hole, Wyoming. His family became worried when he stopped contacting his children. Then they found his body September 28th, and it was revealed that he died of suicide. So, but the authorities, because it's connected, because Gabby was found in the same forest, and also authorities stated that the coverage of Gabby's case in the same area helped highlight Robert's case, and it resulted in two tips being given to police that helped find him.
Oh, okay. Well, that's positive.
So that's something positive that came out of that case.
Yeah.
I had never heard of him, but
me neither.
It's also a very different kind of case, right?
Like, yeah.
But I mean, he was also missing at the same time, so it is still sad. Obviously.
Absolutely.
Then next, on October 1st, the body of Mia Marcano was found. She was 19 and was reported missing on September 24th. So she was last seen at an apartment complex where she worked, and I believe she also lived there, but it was a little unclear in the articles that I was reading.
Mm.
She was later supposed to go see her family by plane, but never boarded the plane, which is why she was reported missing. They found that the maintenance man at the same complex had been named a person of interest and was found dead of an apparent suicide.
Oh.
And so he was a person of interest because he'd previously shown romantic interest in Maya, who rejected him. And 30 minutes before the end of her shift when she disappeared, a key fob was used to enter her apartment that was known to be in the possession of this maintenance man.
Oh, no.
So that's a very sad case as well. And I can't guess it to what her ethnicity is based on her pictures, but I don't believe she was white.
Okay.
And she got some media coverage, but I think mostly because her family was very vocal,
mm-hmm.
Because they were very upset that not enough was done to protect her with this apartment complex and like what was happening between this guy who showed interest in her and had access right. to her apartment. And they were were very upset that her case wasn't as treated as a high priority case like Gabby's was, which is fair.
Oh my God, can you imagine?
So she had quite a few articles, but obviously not nearly as many as Gabby. Like in her case, not to compare them as interesting or whatever, but there is a lot of information there in her case that would result in clicks and media. Like you would think people would be interested in her case.
Absolutely. I get what you're trying to say. Yeah. I agree.
So I find it interesting that I had never heard of her case before. And maybe it had more traction in the U.S. or...
Possibly.
I don't think I said where it was. I believe this was in Florida. And so maybe there was more information there, like news like coverage. Locally.
Yeah.
But you can draw your own conclusions as to why it didn't get coverage. Racism.
The answer to all life's questions.
Then next, on October... Well, there was a couple bodies found on October 9th here. Lauren Cho, a 30-year-old from New Jersey, was found in Yucca Valley, California. She had been staying in an Airbnb with her boyfriend and other guests 2 months before she was found. So she was last seen on June 28th walking away from the Airbnb and was upset, according to her boyfriend. He reported her missing 3 hours later and had stated that she was suffering from mental distress. So far, no cause of death has been released as of October 28th, but they're still waiting for the toxicology reports to come back. I couldn't really figure out why her case was connected, other than, and this is speculation on my part, my guess is it was because there was sightings of Brian in the area. Or they were there, Brian and Gabby were nearby when she went missing. I'm not sure.
Okay.
So she also had a bit more articles than other people, but again, like...
Very limited.
Then again on October 9th, 33-year-old man named Josu Calderon was found in the Watauga County, North Carolina. He was found stabbed to death. And originally, he was speculated to be Brian Laundrie because there had been possible sightings of him in the area, but was later discovered to be Josu. I didn't see any articles on suspects, really any other information other than updates on it's not Brian, it's this other man.
It's so crazy that the only reason, really...
Yeah.
That there's any media coverage is because they're either were in the same area. They're not even related. They're not related. No. They weren't. I feel like there's been some misrepresentation about how they were discovered because I 100%. Thought while they were searching for her, they were finding other missing people in that area.
That's definitely how it was presented in the TikTok video that I sent you. Yes. I'm sure it was. And also in the headlines of these articles.
Yeah, because... That gets more clicks because it has the name Gabby Petito or Brian Laundrie in it.
Yeah.
That's why they even made those articles to begin with.
Right? Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
It is. Just have two more. Again, on October 9th, a 55-year-old woman, Sarah Bayard, was found in Douglas County, Colorado, after she was reported missing on July 4th. She was last seen June 28th in a convenience store in Parker, Douglas County. Her cause of death has not been released either. Like, I couldn't really find any follow-up information. And her case is not related to the Petito Laundrie case, other than she was found in an area that they had posted photographs from.
Like, it's not connected at all.
That was not, no. So I was getting very annoyed.
Yeah, that's like saying, like, oh, I went to, I don't know, Disneyland, and then there was someone murdered there 3 days later. Like, it's not like I have anything to do with it. I just happened to be there.
Yeah. Like, and I'm in no way saying that... I was annoyed because these people weren't related to the case at all. I was annoyed because it was presented as if they were related to the case, which is like has nothing to do with anything. These people deserve recognition in their own right.
Yeah, not because they happened to pass away somewhere that Brian and Gabby had been at some point in their lives.
Like, isn't that so bizarre?
It almost brings it full circle. It's like, oh yeah, well here's some media attention, but only because they were very, very, you can't even say connected to this case that got huge media attention.
It's just the most bizarre situation. And then the last one is also not connected at all, but was mentioned a few times in a few articles. Emily Ferlazzo, who is 22, was last seen October 16th and was reported missing by her family October 18th. She was traveling with her 41-year-old husband in Vermont and was last seen at their Airbnb. Initially, her husband said she had disappeared after an argument, but later he admitted to police to shooting and dismembering her in their camper.
Oh my God.
Her mother has stated that Emily had been subject to domestic violence previously in her marriage. And so... The only connection between Emily and Gabby's cases are that they are thought to be similar because Gabby, I believe there was some talk about domestic violence in their relationship.
Yeah, I think the fact that there was somebody phoned the police on them because and did say they saw him hitting her.
Right. And I think I don't have any sources on this, so this is all going off my admittedly terrible memory, but I'm sure I read something about how there had been previous instances.
Yeah.
But again, I can't like quote anything. So
wow.
Those are the 9 people that were not found during the search for Gabby and right. Brian. They just happened to somehow have very, 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 very distant connections to them.
That is so interesting.
Isn't that wild?
I'm still glad that you looked into it because it even just sheds more light on what we're talking about. And also yeah. the fact that, you know, at least we know their names.
Yes.
Which it's every single story is sad and terrible in its own way.
Exactly.
Like you said, they still deserve recognition and mourning. I think because when Gabby was found, you know, then the whole country, almost the whole world was mourning the loss of this person, right?
Exactly.
You know, which is one nice thing to come out of so much media attention is that there's this outpouring of love and,
right,
you know, she's touched all these people, whereas these other people, they don't get that same treatment.
Right. And the other thing is, these 9 people all had horrible things happen to them.
Yeah.
And almost none of them had any sort of resolution or mm-hmm. justice served, whether it's being investigated or not.
Yeah.
And that's something that they deserve too, and their families deserve to know what happened to them.
Absolutely. And realistically, if they do solve, I mean, some of the cases are closed, but if they do solve them, will we hear?
Exactly. No.
Probably not. Maybe, you know, maybe a couple of them, but probably not, which is really sad as well. Wow. Well, this has been really interesting and depressing.
Very depressing.
What are your final thoughts on the topic? And like, how do you feel sort of now that we've researched and discussed it more?
I'm kind of finding myself feeling very similar to when we had our talk in episode 10 about true crime and kind of like the darkness behind it all. Like, these are real people with real families, and these like very real, very terrible things happen to them. And it's just looked at as entertainment.
Yeah.
Which is something that I need to keep in mind because I do love true crime.
Me too. And I consume it.
Like almost daily.
And almost without enough thought. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. Like, yeah. It is consumed almost as entertainment. Not even almost. Yeah. It is consumed as entertainment. And then the other thing is, on the missing white women syndrome, there was some very interesting, like, the whole thing that you brought up was all very interesting. And I think one of the main things I'm going to take away from this discussion about it is the whole, it is white media and white entertainment presented to white people for white people. Like, it's all very white-centric, and maybe trying to think of ways to change that, at least in my own little circle, like what changes I can make.
Absolutely. And we can pay more attention to how we consume media and what cases we give our attention to, and just having the discussions, I think, is important. How many people in our lives even know that there is that missing white women syndrome has its own Wikipedia page, right?
Oh, exactly. Or even that's a term.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's good. I agree. I think it's given me pause a little bit on, yeah, like you said, there's a family, multiple families living out their worst nightmare. Like, absolutely. The worst possible thing that could happen to your baby happened. And those are real people, and it's a little scary how crazy this case got. And then obviously, of course, the flip side of it is that there's still so much work to be done in this space of, giving attention to all people from all walks of life and people from all races and social status. And it just makes me sad that things are the way they are. But like you said, all we could do is sort of make, you know, small changes within our own lives and try to be better that way.
Yeah. That actually, it reminds me of this. This is so pretentious of me, but this Maya Angelou quote that I heard the other day. But it was, do the best you can until you know better. And then when you know better, do better.
Oh, I really like that.
And I really like that. And I wrote it down because I felt like it would come up in this episode, and it did.
Oh, that's really nice.
But it kind of sums up, I feel like, what we were saying in a very succinct way.
Yeah. And even the fact that we're having this conversation doing an episode about it is something, right?
Right. That is something we can do.
On our small platform.
Yes.
Anyways, well, that was really good. So before we go, we need to do our weekly What the Fucks, which we haven't done in so long.
I know. I'm so excited.
Me too.
I have one that'll lighten the mood a little bit because that was really heavy, guys. Like, thank you for sticking with us for...
Yes. It's important, though.
It is very important.
Yeah.
It's gonna sit with me for a while.
Same, I agree. But tell me your weekly What the Fuck. Lighten the mood here.
So it was recently my profession's celebratory week for us. So like think Nurses Week, yeah. Teachers Week, all that sort of thing. So we had our week, and what usually comes with our week is a whole lot of food. And so one of the things that's very popular is donuts. Because who doesn't love a donut? So I was having a discussion with some of my coworkers, and I brought up that I had read somewhere that Canada, loving donuts is a very Canadian thing. And they're like, really? Like, I actually don't know where I heard this. I could be pulling it out of my ass. But so then I was like, let's Google it. So I Googled it. And now I can't find the article again. But it was a research done by Tim Hortons. And Canada is the number one consumer of donuts in the world.
No way.
Which I think is really crazy, but also like kind of makes sense. Like donuts are just a thing here.
Totally. It actually does make sense, right? To me.
That's a thing. Like people bring in donuts to work. Like donuts, yes. Donuts, donuts, donuts. And so what I found the most interesting about this research that Tim Hortons did was Canada consumes 1 billion donuts a year.
Whoa.
A billion donuts.
There's 33 million people here or something like that? How many donuts is that per person?
Okay, let me Google it. Or not, I'm not going to Google that. I'm going to do some math.
You're going to Google it?
Do some math. If I can find my calculator. 1 billion divided by 33 million.
Yeah. And that could be, that's a pretty guesstimate.
30 donuts. We all eat 30 donuts a year. I mean.
I'm just trying to think. Like, I probably have a donut maybe like once a month.
That's kind of like me at most.
Ish. Probably a little less.
Right.
But then there's going to be people who are like.
Like daily. Like.
That's hilarious.
Isn't that funny?
I never knew it, but it totally. It doesn't shock me.
That's the thing. And I just thought that was just like very interesting. And the last thing that I thought was interesting about this research was they listed Canada's top 10 donuts. And I want to know what you think the number one donut in Canada is. Because I thought this was crazy, but Chris got all of the top three, and I don't know how.
Boston cream.
Yeah.
Is that the number
one? That's the number one.
No way.
But now you have to guess 2 and 3.
Okay. Oh, wow. Apple fritter?
Yeah.
No way.
How do you know that?
I'm just thinking about the donuts that are most popular when you get like a dozen donuts.
And then what's number three?
Just a plain glaze.
Very close. And that's actually what Chris guessed. And it's the old-fashioned plain.
Ooh, Trevor likes those.
I don't know anyone that eats those. Like, who orders that?
When he gets them, I'm like, wow, how's your gross plain donut? Like,
how's your bread?
Oh, that's a really good.
I thought that was so interesting. And I'm so surprised that you guys guessed those. Because when I was talking about this at work, because we had a very lengthy conversation about this. Because I think because I was interested in it and I made everyone else listen to me. I couldn't believe that 2 and 3 were apple fritter and old fashioned plain.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's my
I love that.
Weekly What the Fuck.
Okay, my weekly What the Fuck. I know we're getting pretty long here, guys.
Yes,
so just,
sorry.
But no, not your fault. But listen to this because I think this is What the Fuck worthy. So I was on my Apple News app the other day and I clicked on this article and I started to read it and then I closed it because I wanted to read it with you in live time. So the article is from NBCChicago.com. It is called True Life. I'm a millennial and I don't know most of the new words Merriam-Webster just added.
Oh.
By Maura Homan. So I started scrolling and we're just going to go through the words and we're going to see if either one of us know it.
Okay.
So I haven't gone and like actually read what any of the words mean.
Oh, I'm excited. This is fun.
It is fun. Okay. The first one, I definitely don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think you will either.
Okay.
0 day.
Okay. Can I guess?
Yep.
Is a 0 day when you do absolutely nothing? Like you plan to do nothing?
No.
Oh.
It means you're having a bad day.
Oh.
And then it says, it actually means a vulnerability that is discovered and exploited by cyber criminals before it's fixed.
What? How are those two things related?
I'm not sure. I think that's actually what it means, and the author is making fun of, like, the 0 day, meaning, like, you're having a bad day.
Okay.
Anyways, okay, next one. We're rapid-firing these.
Okay.
Blank check company. I don't know.
Oh, I have no idea. I've never heard that.
This is a synonym for special purpose acquisition company.
What?
I don't know what that means.
I was like, am I stupid? I don't know what those words mean put together.
Okay, next one we both know.
Okay.
For sure.
Is it Chewy? Oh.
No. Deplatform.
Oh, yeah.
So that just means, like, you're taken off of... Donald Trump was deplatformed from Facebook, Twitter, yes. Right? Basically, if you're...
Removed.
Yeah. If you're going against their terms, right?
Yeah.
Enough times, you... Next one, I definitely don't know. Oobleck.
Bless you. What?
It's a word for a specific type of slime inspired by Dr. Seuss. Like, what?
Where do people come up with this?
Why are they adding these words to the dictionary is what I want to know.
People use that enough in their daily life that that's a word?
No way. Okay, and the last one is teraflop.
Oh.
I don't know.
Sounds like a fun word to say, though. Teraflop.
Okay, so it's a unit of measure for calculating speed of a computer equal to 1 trillion. I don't, honestly don't even know what that sentence means.
I felt like I was having a stroke when you were saying it. I was like, okay.
However, the last line of the article is so funny. It says, excuse me while I arrange my pillows perfectly and teraflop into bed forever, which I relate to so hard.
That is, I could use it that way.
Right?
That's amazing. I loved that.
I feel, like, really out of touch. It didn't really make me feel old. It made me feel a little, like, stupid.
Yeah. You know what's the worst part? Is, like, the words didn't necessarily make me feel stupid. The explanations did. I was like, I don't know what that means.
Like, blank check acquisition company.
Yeah. Like, a special acquisition company. Like, what is that?
So that was my weekly what the fuck. I saved it just for...
I love that.
Us and our listeners.
Look at our little games we're playing at the end.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you guys for listening.
Yeah, thank you for sticking with us through this very, very long episode. I really hope you guys enjoyed it and I hope you guys learned something. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, our Instagram at WTF People Podcast, and our website at WTFpeoplePodcast.com. Please follow and subscribe and rate us 5 stars. It means a ton to us that you guys are listening to us. You can contact us at WTFpeoplePodcast@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram. You can send us your thoughts on this week's episode on missing white women syndrome. Any cases that you guys have heard of recently or that you're interested in that you think isn't getting enough attention that you'd like us to talk about. If you have any wine suggestions or drink suggestions, any comments, critiques, topic ideas, we want to hear it. And remember, don't be an asshole.
Bye, guys.
Bye.